Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Friday, June 12th, 2020. Thank you for joining me. Some pretty solid information today that I think is incredibly relevant to the topic of coronavirus and the foreknowledge around that topic. We've talked about a lot of that on this show. Whether it's the AI plan, some of these things we're going to go over a little bit more in a moment. The AI plan that was brought forward to be for coronavirus, contact tracing that was brought forward for coronavirus, on and on and on. All these things, as we've been talking about, are things that have been there, that they've been working on, that they've been wanting to use. And suddenly, this is just the one-stop shop. Remember, at the beginning, I was keeping a list of all the agendas that were being fulfilled with this. I just stopped doing it because it just everything, every single thing you could possibly imagine. Apologize for being late today. I didn't even realize I was behind my time. That's why I was like, oh, wow, my apologies. But we're going to get into some really powerful stuff today. And actually something that's being reported, in my opinion, a little bit more definitive than it actually is. But nonetheless, I still find the information within it to be incredibly powerful and relevant when you consider it with everything else around the topic. This, of course, has to do with Bill Gates and the drafter of the contact tracing bill, H.R. 6666. That's Congressman Rush. And the meeting that took place with him, the Gates Foundation, Harvard, included them, I should say, EcoHealth Alliance. You know, that little middleman group between the Wuhan labs and the U.S. government where they gave the money to EcoHealth Alliance and they gave it to Wuhan. Little middleman idea. They were there, including people tied to the Rockefeller Foundation, people tied to the Clinton Foundation. All kinds of things that are very, very suspect with this entire topic. But most importantly, one of the primary groups that's the beneficiary participant in the contact tracing program. And of course, all of this took place in August 2019. Right? Because they, of course, knew at that time that coronavirus was going to be happening before everyone else in the world, apparently. And then a couple months later had Event 201. And we're going to get into this to start today, as well as some more about coronavirus and things that are being pushed in. Some more notes, as usual, things that are relevant to discussion. A little bit more in regard to the divide and conquer tactic that's happening right now and other agendas around all of that, and some really disturbing foreign policy to end with today. But I want to start off quickly to point out something I had mentioned online today on Twitter that I was going to be talking with Derek Brose today. And of course, it's my schedule, of course, as usual, was the problem. And I wasn't able to time this correctly today. So he's getting his article done right about now. And that will be going up ASAP. But unfortunately, we weren't able to connect today. And that was my fault. But we're probably going to try and have him on tomorrow. But for those that aren't following this, Derek Brose has been keeping track and moment by moment, what's going on with the fluoride trial, which is a really, really big deal. I mean, this is ultimately deciding the reality of what fluoride is and how dangerous it is and whether or not it should be in our water. And this is something that a lot of people have been, I mean, think about how relevant that is to the discussion, as that was something that moments ago people were shouting you down as a conspiracy theorist. And here we're literally watching an actual legitimate court case play out that could decide that reality. Now think about the consequences of if that were to rule in the favor of the fact that this is a toxicity that shouldn't be in your water because it doesn't do anything for you, which is the reality. What will that then suggest and say about all of the lies and all of the studies and all of the government action that have led up to now? Very powerful stuff. So look out for that. And as you see, Derek has been following this all day for the last week. Updating everything that's happening, giving information on the studies. So I recommend you go and you check out his feed. Research this to understand what's going on, because it's very important. And for those, again, that don't understand the reality of this, it's something that you need to realize is very clear. Numerous studies, countless studies showing how this is very dangerous. This is essentially waste. It's a byproduct of things that are being conducted that have nothing to do with you. It's waste that's dangerous. And they decided, oh, okay, well, let's just put it into your drinking water because it helps your teeth. And a point that James Corbett just made in a recent video, which I thought was fantastic. He goes, of course, right? Because, you know, when you want to stop the sun from burning your skin, you drink suntan lotion, right? So when you want to stop your teeth from going bad, you drink fluoride, right? Don't think about it too hard, right? It doesn't make sense. And the reality is, as I keep pointing out, that how stupid do we have to be to buy the narrative that our government you have to pry dollars from their hands to do anything, including just, you know, give health care to Americans. But sure, they're willing to spend all this money to put chemicals in your water so your teeth are cleaner. Even the logic that it helps your teeth white, it doesn't make sense because it causes dental fluorosis. Anyway, I could go off on this forever. And this is something that I'm very passionate about that I've done a lot of research on that I've been covering for a long time. But this is a big deal. So we will follow up on this. The information will be out there. Probably the article will be up tonight so you guys can look into it. But realize this is the kind of thing that needs to set the whole this needs to create the right context in your mind for what our government is capable of, what they were willing to do to you in the name of what makes you healthy, in the name of what is beneficial to you, when eventually you turn around years later and find out that none of that was actually true. And that has to reflect on what they've done in the past and where we are right now. And I know this can be hard for some people to grasp, but you need to understand that the history is there. Any number of things. I mean, it is, for example, something as easy as geoengineering that people still pretend is crazy, yet they're doing it right now. I mean, on and on. I could go off on this forever, as I said, but I hope you guys will look into this more. And I'm glad I remembered, as well as the fact that tomorrow is hashtag expose Bill Gates, day of action. I will be out myself. Hopefully you'll be doing the same. And hopefully we can raise some awareness, because today especially is interestingly tied in with that exact topic. But before we get to that, which we are starting with, we need to realize that this is coming back again. This is what it's all about. This whole agenda and what it accomplishes, even as we know, and somebody made a good point the other day, reached out to me, and this is my mistake, by the way, just in speaking off the cuff, but if you remember the information that I lay out and the stats that I've said up until now, you should realize that that was just my speaking incorrectly. I was saying accidentally that it was less severe than the flu based on their numbers, which is actually incorrect. And again, this is based on their data, so I don't know why we would trust that the flu is what they tell us it is, but based on that, it's about 0.1 or so, and what they're saying this is 0.26, which would make it what I was meaning to say, and incorrectly saying, as I originally said, their data shows that this is, at worst, a severe case of the flu, which those that watch this show remember that's what I first said. Just good to correct the record, because I make mistakes like anybody can, but the bottom line is, either way, it's the same point, that this is not what we were told it was. Even the CDC, who, by the way, right now is still suggesting we wear masks and social distance, even as their own data shows that it's basically a severe case of the flu. So even as that's happening, we are still seeing this. Houston, quote, on the precipice of disaster as officials weigh reimposing stay-at-home orders amid the spike in cases. Okay, a spike in cases of something that's essentially a severe flu. Why do we pretend that this makes sense? It's coming back. And this is what we need to see. CDC issues new guidance. Not just Houston. CDC is saying that lockdowns may be necessary. You know, why? Well, if a dramatic comeback of coronavirus takes place, which is exactly what they're building right now, I've been showing you. Uh-oh, all these protests. Basically, remember I showed you the whole mathematical thing they do. Well, based on the amount of protesters, we're probably going to have this many cases. Gee, I wonder if that ends up happening. And even if it was legitimate, even if it really does, we really did have so they tell us, dramatic spread of the flu in the last season. What did we do then? Nothing. So why now? What I'm trying to get through to people, especially those that may be new, is that even no matter how you view the situation, even if you think it's legitimate, even if you think everything the government's told you is true, except the fact that they've shown to be false in their own information up to date, but now their information is showing us that now, 0.26, no matter how you view it, what they're forcing in right now doesn't make sense. As I keep pointing out, they based their actions that subsequently destroyed our economy, made you lose your job, make sure you can't feed your family, you know, on and on and on. Those actions led to this. And those actions were based on the estimates of the same people, of groups like the ones that laid out all the ridiculous numbers that led to everything, and the CDC and everybody else. So now we're at a point where we have more information. And they make another estimate a much more legitimate estimate based on a lot more data. And now they're saying, whoa, that's just an estimate. We can't do anything based on that. So understand clearly that they are more than happy to just take everything away from you possible. Remove your rights, crack down on you, take away your job. And they're willing to remove everything based on their estimate, early estimate. However, they're not willing to give it all back to you based on a more accurate estimate. I think that's just overwhelmingly clear. But knowing that they're building this back up and that it's coming and they're saying, oh, it's going to be here. It's all your fault. It's already happening. We need to see how this is developed and remember how this was planned and built and organized long before we got here, regardless of whether this is what popped up and they decided to use or they made it happen. Either way, it's nefarious and it's deceptive. Now, I want to start with an interesting comment made by RFK Jr. He says, President Trump, and this is, you guys all remember this, it was interesting. And I made this comment to another Trump supporter I know that I said, this is what we need to look at. That in the beginning versus now, it is night and day. What Trump was saying when he was trying to get elected and the people that he brought on in the beginning and the whole argument of being, you know, not the usual politicians draining the swamp and all that compared to where it is now is just unbelievable. I mean, it's like you go from pretending to drain the swamp to literally going, how can I make this the most swampy thing possible? Oh, I don't know. Let's take somebody from GlaxoSmithKline and Moderna and make them the vaccines are. You know, it's ridiculous. Somebody like this, if Robert F. Kennedy Jr. were in that position or involved at all, do you think for a moment that we would be talking about forced vaccines or vaccines at all based on something that we're knowing is not as severe or not, excuse me, again, see, there I go again, based, it's something that's basically as bad as the flu, if not a little more. He says, Trump asked me to lead his vaccine safety commission. And that's true. In January, shortly after the public announcement, this is also true. Pfizer donated, that's a vaccine company, or rather just a pharmaceutical company, donated $1 million to President Trump's inaugural committee. See, this is how the whole lobbying thing works. That's basically a bribe, right? But because we talk about it in donations as, you know, candidates, like think about this in any other context, that's a bribe. They don't just give that away. They hope, at the very least, they get something in return. And they did. He says, we made a promise, a promising start, with several preliminary meetings with federal health officials, including Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci, in February and March. At the end of March, President Trump appointed Pfizer's hand-picked candidate, which we now know, Scott Gottlieb, as the FDA director, a man who worked for the pharmaceutical company, or at the very least is wildly tied to them. Their personal hand pick is the person now in charge of the FDA. Gee, I wonder if he's going to lean in the direction of the people that he benefits and the people that put him in the position. You know, a position that's supposed to be making sure that drugs are safe and not beneficial to pharmaceutical companies at your expense, as we all know is what's happening. Gee, I wonder why. He says Gottlieb served on Pfizer's board of directors and on the product investment board for GlaxoSmithKline. Yeah, the group that Moderna, or the Salawi, the vaccine czar, also worked for. The world's top vaccine maker. Gottlieb killed the Vaccine Safety Commission and declared war on homeopathy. What do you know? You know, that thing that the Rockefeller and the Carnegies destroyed back in the early 1900s, even though Rockefeller continued to use a homeopathic doctor until the day he died. Right? He wanted to take it away from you so that he could force down his petrochemical drugs down your throat, but he made sure he got the best and lived till he was 95 in the middle of the 1900s. Think about that. Killed the Vaccine Safety Commission. In November, President Trump appointed Eli Lilly President Alex Azar as Health and Human Services Secretary, another obvious conflict of interest. Afterward, President Trump cut off all communications with us in talking about Kennedy. And Francis Collins, Tony Fauci's boss, told us to take a hike and stop calling him. So if you're looking for more evidence that Fauci and Trump are on the same path, there you go. The bottom line is you can see a shift here to the wrong side, or however you want to look at it, away from actual objectivity and fighting for what the people want and, you know, honest and not just about profit and control, but about safety and what Americans actually concerned about and what we actually ask for. But this is where we see shifting. Now let's step over into the main story today, which I find very, very interesting. Now, this story, again, I want to stress right off the bat that even the headline, the way it's framed, I disagree with. There's nothing to, I mean, let me be clear. I very much think that something happened here. That's my opinion. The timing of it all, who all met, and how it all went down, and most importantly, the people that are reporting this, not the website, but the people who are actually reporting this, the investigators. That is why I feel this has so much more here. But the fact that to say that Bill Gates negotiated a billion-dollar contract deal with that person, that's just not verified. Neither the investigators nor the evidence they suggest or any of it says that is the fact. So just always think about that. And I have to be honest, I'm not a big, huge fan of this site, but the information is important for you to see. Now here, first of all, before we even get into it, I want to show you the investigators, the people that we're talking about here. These are the guys, and you will remember this because we talked about it on this show. These are the people, the guys who blew the whistle on the Clinton Foundation, right? The people that stood up in front of Congress and just laid it out and said, here's what they're doing. It's their own piggy bank. And if you remember, nothing happened at all. Of course, because Trump's going to lock her up, right? Nothing happened. Mountains of evidence. Well before this, anyway. And then they added all this evidence and still nothing happened. But I want you to understand this because I find these two people to be credible. Now, it doesn't mean we should blindly trust what they have to say, but I find them to be credible. And I want you to see the people I'm talking about so you understand what I mean. Because this was a powerful hearing.
What was the percentage for the Clinton Foundation?
Based upon the information we have from the 990s, and we do not believe that that is complete because we do not have subpoena power, 40% by our calculation ended up going to programs and 60% was admitted.
What in your analysis did you come across what appeared to be pay to play? I know that wasn't the focus necessarily.
No, to be very clear, our focus is on financial analysis and whether they live within the boundaries. As part and parcel of that investigation, we did come across instances of that.
You said in your opening statement you used the term agent of a foreign government. Give me an example of that.
Sure. There are so many examples. Mozambique. In 2002, it was a memorandum of agreement between the foundation and the Mozambique.
The Clinton Foundation, in case I didn't make that clear.
Through their Ministry of Health program. And again, through that engagement, it was plainly obvious, again, based on emails that we've reviewed, that this was not a Clinton Foundation program per se. They were there to support the Mozambique Ministry of Health.
Now, I could keep going on this. You guys, I'll try to remember to put a link in there if I can remember to find one. But the point is, these are people that just laid it out, all backed up by evidence, went to town showing this to people. And I feel like that gives credence to their stance in general. Now, here's what's interesting. If you listen to the whole interview, essentially these people are investigators and they're clearly investigating the Clinton Foundation. And this led to connections in regard to this topic, in regard to Bill Gates, which they openly say, and I'll play a couple of clips in a moment, about the ties between the Clinton Foundation and Bill Gates and his foundation and the whole thing. And they reference the concept of the Clinton Foundation and how they were tied directly to a company that was called Ranbaxy Laboratories, which was involved with giving catastrophically bad drugs in regard to AIDS to people in Africa. And you might remember the scandal from 2015 and before, where one of the people involved was caught on the record saying, quote, well, who cares? It's just the blacks dying. That's on record. No one's ever denied it. All right, this is tied directly to the Clinton Foundation in regard to you, and it's the same thing. And the whole point they're making in this is about the idea that this is essentially a jump in the technocratic scientific elite state that we have from the AIDS control mechanism and the manipulation therein with the drugs and the pharmaceuticals into the new version, which is coronavirus. And this is just their opinion, understand. But then I'm just laying this out for you so you see this whole picture so you understand that. Now, so let's get into the real meat of this. So I find this to be very, very interesting overall. Now, this is, again, back to the article itself, the title. Bill Gates negotiated $100 billion contract tracing deal with Democratic congressman, which is Rush, the sponsor of a bill 6 months before. And he was the sponsor of H.R. 666. Now, let's start off. I'm going to play you this one part,
And then I'm going to show you, I'm going to talk about the actual documentation that does in fact confirm that he was there along with all the people that I find very, very suspect.
Over and above this, though, who is really even, what I would maintain, even above the Clintons, central to this entire, John was talking about this ecosystem or swamp or deep state or whatever, you know, smack in the middle of it was Bill Gates. I mean, he is all over this entire space.
Basically suggesting that Gates in his own way, in regard to whether it's like this nebulous idea of a deep state or something, that Gates in a way, in their opinion, based on their, not just opinion of this, what they're looking at on YouTube, but we're talking financial documentation. That's what these people are doing, if you remember what they did before. They're diving through records, information, what they're connected to, what they're funding, and in their opinion, based on that information, they feel like Gates is, you know, more so above this idea than even the Clinton Foundation. That's pretty interesting. Definitely ties to the idea that we're talking about, especially involving what we're doing tomorrow.
And he not only sits on the board of that Unitaid, heavily involved with the Global Fund, heavily involved with these pharmaceutical companies. And the fact is, these pharmaceutical companies, both Ranbaxy and also Gilead, they were distributing adulterated medicines.
Now, he's talking about Ranbaxy, that's the group I just mentioned, and Gilead. If you remember, Gilead was the group that Donald Rumsfeld made millions of dollars on during the anthrax scare. This conflict of interest thing doesn't just, it's constantly there because these people are fraudulent, they're corrupt. That's what our system is. It's not just today, it's not just Trump. That's what we need to realize, because that's what's stopping people from seeing the full picture. But what he says is they gave them adulterated drugs, things that were manipulated. At the very least, things that were not, that caused unnecessary side effects and did not do what they said they would do. And their argument is this is something, whether we're talking about testing or human experimentation, there was things going on here. And as they said, well, I'll let him finish.
Adulterated medicines. I mean, in fact, an executive at Ranbaxy.
Tainted medicines. I'm talking about tainted medicines. Like, they're not real.
Tainted medicines. They have such little effect, and what happens is it leads to significant levels of drug resistance. These are like ticking time bombs.
All right, well, I'm going to skip to the next one after that, but I want to show you what I'm getting at here. This is the document. Now, this is what I wish. So the article itself, this is what should have been included. Like something like, you should to make these claims, you need to have a link like this included. Right? Because the claim in the article, it goes on to talk about how basically it makes the claim that these two people, we're talking about John Moynihan and Larry Doyle, the people you saw in the Clinton Foundation clip I played. Right? This apparently is their first interview since that point. And they're basically talking about how Congressman Bobby Rush met in Rwanda with people from the Gates Foundation. And people from a lot of groups, Harvard, Eco Health Alliance, like I talked about. And then, of course, Rush went on to introduce the $100 billion bill for contact tracing. One of the people at this meeting was somebody who directly benefited from the contact tracing bill. Of course, it says Rush's bill would establish a program run by the CDC for contact tracing. But he says that they also learned that Payne was in Rwanda from the 12th to the 19th for an event underwritten by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, that is not linked anywhere, right? So that's what I was trying to find out for myself. And here is the point. This is the Aspen Institute, which is what they mentioned in the interview. It's a congressional program. Africa's economic security and development challenges and the U.S. role. August 12th to 19th, 2019, which is the exact date that we're talking about, according to the investigators. August 2019. Now, you go down to the bottom and you'll find the participants. And we will find the people you might expect. First of all, Bobby Rush, Representative Bobby Rush. Okay, he met here just so we're clear, this is not, the document is not saying we're here to talk about contact tracing. It's about something completely unrelated, which you could make the argument that's not what happened here. Right? That's why I feel like the statement in the article is a little bit too definitive for me. But I find it incredibly relevant that in August, in 2019, right about the time, remember, when this was beginning, right? When we know that there was things happening around Fort Detrick, we know that there was weird so-called vaping clusters that were happening around Fort Detrick and the weird nursing home clusters that they said was the cold and vaping, which had the exact same symptoms of coronavirus all the way back then. All this different stuff was happening right now. And so here they are meeting over here. Same time frame. Bobby Rush, as well as people from EcoHealth Alliance. I find that one to be incredibly relevant. Remember, EcoHealth Alliance is the very group that was the middleman between the funding from the U.S. government to the Wuhan lab in their research in regard to coronaviruses and bats. So why in the world are they here for some African security summit? Okay, you also have Harvard. Surprise, surprise. You know, Harvard, like Charles Lieber. Harvard, like the group that got kicked out of China for stealing Chinese DNA. Yep, those same people. Okay, this isn't necessarily relevant, but Uganda prevention of trafficking in persons. Okay, then Georgetown University. But the real more, the important ones to see are the Gates Foundation. Okay, representatives, multiple representatives from the Gates Foundation. And one of them, which is, by the way, a UN's relations officer. It's tied to the United Nations, tied to all these different groups, the World Health Organization. Okay, the bottom line is we need to be able to recognize that this happened. That they met in Africa in a group, and as well as the most important one, before I forget all of these, I had them written down, EcoHealth Alliance, Harvard, Partners in Health. Oh, by the way, this was the article I was mentioning in regard to Ranbaxy Laboratories. Just for the reference they were making, this is legitimate. Who cares? It's just the blacks dying. This was tied to the Clinton Foundation. And of course, news broke that covered up the whole story. No one talked about it. Big surprise. But COVID-19 contact tracing resources and information. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts, along with Partners in Health, which, by the way, guess what? Was one of the groups involved with that thing in Africa, according to these investigators. Okay, now they are one of the primary beneficiaries, participants in regard to contact tracing. I mean, so we have EcoHealth Alliance, Harvard, the Gates Foundation. The very person who then went on to create H666. I mean, it's literally everybody involved with what ended up happening in regard to contact tracing. I find that to be hard to miss. Then, I find it interesting just to point out that Partners in Health has some kind of weird crossover happening right now between, look, injustice has a cure, public statement in response to George Floyd. I can't stop seeing the crossover between these protests and coronavirus. They're clearly, the New York state of emergency, their latest state of emergency, blended the two things together. I see an agenda here, guys. And then you have to point out that Event 201, right? The whole thing where they exercise about the thing that ended up happening literally exactly like they outlined it, right down to the name they used for the virus and everything. That took place October 18th, less than 2 months after, or maybe about exactly 2 months after they met in Africa. So they all meet, all of them, all the same people. And then they all come together and meet for Event 201, talk about Event 201 and plan for what was happening. Okay. Then we have the very same person who was there create HR6666 about contact tracing specifically, which creates the situation to send $100 billion in money to people like Partners in Health. Okay? And also remember that this is for fiscal year 2020. Right? And as it says, such sums as may be necessary for each of the fiscal year 2021 and any subsequent fiscal year during which the emergency period continues. So basically, that's just this year. So get ready for another $100 billion in 2021 and so on. And maybe when they increase it or triple it or quadruple it because it's such a pandemic. And of course, the money goes towards tracking you. We've gone in depth on this show about the contact tracing and how horrifying that is. I mean, I might as well just bring it up right now since I just saw it again today. The COVID pass. Remember, we just talked about this. This is one of the groups that are working on things like this. This is the health passport. This is a digital passport. This is the same concepts that we're working on that are going to be used in the contact tracing process. How COVID pass works. Digital identification. right? And this is just how they're going to be tracking. The contact tracing on top of that is how they then work out away from people and then end up basically tracking everybody. Because, oh, well, that person that you met at the restaurant that then got sick, well, then the people that they met and their family members and who they met and who they knew that day before and everyone they saw and on and on and on. It doesn't stop. And that's how it works. Because they have to be secure, right? About the thing that's a little more dangerous than the flu. Doesn't make sense, guys. It just doesn't make sense. But we have to see how this is being set up. Now, as I said, I'm never going to be the one that says, this is what happened. Bill Gates made a deal. We just don't know that. Again, my opinion, I think there's something very clearly that happened here. There's just no way to miss how we can have the very people that benefited from it, the very person who made the bill, the very person who funded the bill, the very country who then used it, all in the same place, all right before Event 201, and then all right before it started. I mean, it's just ridiculous. We need it to see this. And by the way, it's exactly what the two investigators are saying. This stuff happens over and over and over, and they're just seeing exactly what they keep seeing happen. They're referencing what they met, that their whiteboard and their outline for what they're seeing, how it's just a basic overlap from the AIDS manipulation right to today. Some people haven't even grasped yet that the AIDS was, sorry, it was a manipulation, right? We're still trying to grasp that. So they're pulling it again. But what we need to realize, guys, is this is not only one isolated event. Right? BlackRock authored the bailout plan that they're using to steal all of your money before there was a crisis, right? So the bailout plan was written way before it ever happened. You know, the bailout plan they're justifying with coronavirus. So they basically allow the Israeli government connected BlackRock company that basically now controls the US Treasury to do whatever they want with your money. And they wrote it all out before it ever even started. Because that totally makes sense. Oh, right. And there's the AI plan that they made in 2010. They now said, well, it's perfect for coronavirus, or it's for coronavirus that they're now forcing in. This is happening. This, Whitney Webb's amazing article, which I recommend you read, how the U.S. National Security State is using coronavirus to fulfill its Orwellian agenda or vision. This is what it is. We have to see this stuff. Remember Trump and the Fed, right? And the Fed, lock her up, all this stuff. Well, guess what? The Fed says full range of tools in play to counter the pandemic? What? Okay. So now we're just letting the Fed just, I mean, this is out of control. And everybody on their political sides are just letting it happen because they're blinded by the two-party paradigm. The Fed is using its, quote, full range of tools to counter the pandemic. Gee, I wonder what that will entail. If there's ever been a time to end the Fed like Trump pretended he wanted to do, it would be now. This is out of control. Here's something else. As we just talked about, I want you to remember, based on the same idea, this is more of the same technocratic surveillance network all being forced in based on something that we know now is not as severe as they told us it was. Enforcement policy for telethermographic systems. This is telethermographic surveillance. As I pointed out the other day, and I didn't have it open. I think it's right here. In their own documentation, it says very clearly, if I can find it really quickly, I think I can. It says in this document, yeah, I remember where it was now, for non-medical purposes. Right here. It says, in regard to conditions or in the cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention. Okay, so as they frame it in the main document, the synopsis, for the people that won't actually research it, they make it sound like, oh, this is just a bedside thing for people who are dying. You know, just about keeping track and, you know, basically a big fancy thermometer, right? No. That's not what it is, because this is about prevention, treatment, mitigation, basically everywhere all the time. This is a surveillance network. You know how we talked about the things they're already talking about implementing in regard to sensors for viruses, right? The only way that would work is if they were ubiquitous, if they were everywhere, to sense things in the air, whatever. This is, we've already talked about this. It's something they're already working on. So this would be part and parcel with that. This would be everywhere. Thermogenic sensors to make sure that people aren't sick. This is the kind of network they're building, guys. And it's all coming along just the way we told you it would. All of it. On top of that, think about the kind of thing they're building now, the kind of control network and the kind of things that the kind of see something, say something society that we're building here. people are now stuck in their homes, whether we're talking about, you know, protests or whatever else is going on. So they're doing Zoom to do these things. And in a classroom, a teacher literally took a screenshot of a BB gun in a child's room and they raided the person's home. An 11-year-old with a BB gun. I mean, guys, I grew up around people who had guns when they were children. I think having children understand how to safely control and use guns is paramount. But you see, that's blasphemy to people who think somehow guns are the problem and not the idiots who use them incorrectly or the governments who allow those idiots. I mean, this is the problem, right? The reality is it's your constitutional right. And who cares? The government does not have a say in that. The problem is we're now having people who think that their morals mandate something more than that person's right. But then realize it's a BB gun. And that these people went so far outside the realm of what they're allowed to do, whether a teacher, the police, and raided the person's home based on... Now imagine if they had raided the home and somebody didn't know they were coming and they got shot in the process. You know, defending their home and their family, which happens all the time. Guess what would happen? It would be the person's fault for defending their home. So you're supposed to just always assume that it might be the police when somebody's breaking into your house. You know, because how often they do no-knock raids and break in the middle of the night and don't announce themselves. It happens all the damn time. And this is where it's leading. They always err on the side of, I might just want to sit back and let them do what needs to be done. Right? No, that's not how this works. That is not how this is supposed to operate. They're supposed to be able to operate within the law and then stop. They don't get to be like, well, this is happening, so I'm just going to ad lib what I'm allowed to do. That's the reality we're in now. And there's a point that I'm going to make in a moment that'll make that even more clear. But I want to jump over to this idea about the same concept, right? Where whether we're talking about contact tracing or any of this stuff, it all leans back to the same agenda. And of course, we see Gates tied to most of this right now. Now, this is from a local small paper. Colorado House approves bill to restrict vaccine opt-outs. And that's the best headline I've seen, most legitimate in regard to this. That's completely accurate, in my opinion. Because a lot of people are framing it as they're just, you know, removing the exception, which, by the way, I do think that's what this is meant to do. But that's not what the verbiage says, and it's important to be accurate. But as always, in my opinion, I think this will be used to do just that. This will be used to remove the ability to opt out. Which, by the way, when you actually read the information, is what it pretty much gets down to. But here's the actual fact check, as usual, from Reuters, just like the other ridiculous fact check where they claimed there was no RFID chips on vaccines, except that we very clearly showed you that that was obviously the case, right? We just went over this. I mean, it's so embarrassing that we can have mainstream media make claims on a fact check, and then somehow either not know about or choose to ignore the fact that Apiject, one of the leading vaccine companies trying to make things for coronavirus, are very clearly making an RFID chip tagged vaccine. I guess I just missed the part where it said it right there. RFID. Of course, it's on attached to it. It's not inside the vaccine, but that's not what I'm saying. And in fact, that's not what the people said, which they tried to fact check. Of course, they just want to sell you on the idea that it's not happening because you're a conspiracy theorist if you believe in the things that they're literally creating right in front of you. But of course, this says Colorado bill does not remove exemptions for vaccines. In fact, it literally does. Okay, but it doesn't remove them entirely based on what it's claiming, but it does in fact remove some of these exemptions for some people. So that's just an oversimplification. And it does not include the flu. Okay, fine. The point is, this is an all-encompassing bill for vaccines. So for people to say this is going to be used for COVID-19, and they make that out to be a lie, is again an obvious and intentional misrepresentation. The bill itself is going to be used for vaccines, whether that's COVID-19 that apparently does not exist as we're told yet, or anything else. So this is how they trick you. But the point is, it goes in the vac. It says, overall, the bill in Colorado does not force vaccination, but requires paperwork for exemptions. Okay. Let me ask you this. Is it freedom to have to fill out forms to justify your right to say no to having something pumped inside your arm? No. That is called bureaucracy. And that is the way that they manipulate the reality. So what happens when you go through the whole rigmarole, fill out all the paperwork, and they say, oh, looks like you didn't qualify. Sorry, you got to take your vaccine. Wait a minute. I don't want to. Too bad. You didn't pass it. So it's not your choice, guys. Of course, we're supposed to pretend that they're going to be, you know, honest about it, and they're going to do what's right, and these people would never dare to lie to you. I mean, gosh darn it, who believes this today? People lie for any number of reasons. And today, I think the most common one is because they believe they're right. Doesn't mean you're okay, it's allowed to just lie because you believe you're on the right side, but that's what people have been tricked into today. So imagine you're in a position where the person doing the forums is going, man, this person's trying to get their kid to not have vaccines. Well, they need them because it makes them safe. So I'm going to make sure that this person doesn't pass. In their mind, they're doing the right thing based on their own morals. Let's not pretend that that doesn't happen in this world. The bottom line is to have to fill up paperwork, which, by the way, was already the case. All this did was make it more complicated. It made it more strict and more harder for anybody to have any kind of legitimate restriction. Because understand that a religious exemption, I mean, is simply saying my religion says that it makes it so I'm not allowed to pump dead baby fetuses into my arm. Seems pretty clear. But see, now they're going to grade your exception. So you have to fill it out and say, well, I'm this or I'm a Christian. And you shouldn't have to do that. That's actually an infringement of your privacy. It says the bill does not include the flu, this shot or that shot. No, because it's talking about general. The idea that for vaccination, this will be the case. So why even include that? Because they're trying to deceive you. Why? Because look, it's not even on the market yet. So they're lying. Well, what about when it is on the market? Oh, well, then it will apply. It's just so stupid. And of course, the bill has not become law yet. Well, no one's saying it is. It's passed the House. It's moving forward. What they always do is point to one extremely hyperbolic Facebook post and act like that's the sole encompassing idea of everyone making this claim. And that's always what they do. And by the way, I'm of the mind that these Facebook posts are completely intentional. Think of it like an Alex Jones. They put them out there so they get ridiculous and they say crazy things and people believe them and they're kind of true. And maybe even true to the sense where that is actually what's happening, but you can't prove it, right? And getting real crazy with it and people go, that's crazy because you can't prove it. Either way, all it does is push people away from that, right? So you get these Facebook posts that are making crazy claims that are like completely hyperbolic, that are slightly tied to the reality. And they say, see, that's what it's all about right there. No, that's not what it's all about. It's about people like us on the independent media that are in the middle, that are showing you the reality and showing you both sides of the argument, not fake fact checks that deceive you, right? But here's the actual document. And all of this will be in the show notes in the article and linked in the show notes for you to read, because I want you to come to your own mind about it, not just listen to me. It's crazy, right? It's crazy talk. But as it says, the bill codifies a definition of non-medical exemption to mean an immunization exemption based upon a religious belief whose teachings are opposed to immunizations, or a personal belief that is opposed to immunizations. Why is that the sole definition? Right? You see what I mean? Like, they're trying to couch this into a very specific term so that they can manipulate it. So that's the only one. Now, if you have a religious exemption, you have to say that you're opposed to immunizations. Why can't I say I'm opposed to your bastardized version of it? Why can't I say that I don't want the ones you're making? Which my claim happens. I say all the time that the medical, and I could be wrong on this because I'm not a virologist, but I do believe that there is some logic behind the science of these things. But at the end of the day, the intent behind them is wrong. And again, I could be wrong in that. But the bottom line is that is a correct idea that we know the intent is wrong. So you could argue that there may be some beneficial use to them if we had good people in right places doing correct things based on what's the safest and most effective, not what's most profitable and used to control and dumb the population down and, you know, all these things we're constantly talking about. But here we are, you have to outright claim, well, I'm against immunizations, which will then be used against you, I can promise. And they make it clear in this that it's documented. So you're forming a list, essentially, of everybody who is against on record immunizations. Think about that. Now it says, under current law, each student must submit to a school, as defined by this, a certificate of immunization. So now they're into law saying that you now have to create a digital passport for these students. A certificate of immunization, which in many places is already existing, but this is where it's going. And this is building towards not just students, but everybody. And COVID-19 was the excuse to sell that. Because before, it's like, well, we're adults. We don't need it. It's the kids. It's kids, right? Well, now it's, well, COVID-19, everyone's in danger, right? And now it's not your choice because we're all in danger, right? People like any number of people trying to sell you on the idea that it's not your choice because the safety of collective society is more important, which doesn't necessarily make sense. Especially when you have a rogue, fraudulent government telling you what is the right thing to do and forcing that down your throat. Especially when they are the last person that should ever be telling you about anything that's right or wrong. But, as it says, accurate and up-to-date documentation of immunization status supports coordinated and effective public health disease control response efforts in the case of an outbreak, which helps protect the overall health of the community. Wait, maybe I hit the wrong spot there. Shoot. Okay, well, I just grabbed the one too high. So it's right. The point was 95%. Because diseases such as measles can spread rapidly. Now remember, guys, and oh, I should also point out before I even get to that, that this whole thing is just a gushing report about how successful and how well and how good-intentioned vaccines are, right? Even though the science is simply not there. As people like, honest, I mean, there's any number of honest doctors will point out, as I've said, that the actual doc, even people who created things like the polio vaccine, later went on to say that it did not succeed. Later went on to suggest that thing, like the idea that we showed you, that in regard to polio or any number of things that they herald as successes, in fact, increased when the vaccine went out, and then it went back down to previous levels, and they called that a success. Or in some cases, they were already seeing a decline before the vaccine even came out. And so they then, again, said success. It's not, I'm not, again, the data that they're pushing forward is wildly politicized, and this is about selling you on that idea. But as it says, 95% immunization coverage in schools helps to protect the health of the students. And the argument is they're saying, see, again, I totally grabbed the wrong spot and that's my fault. But bottom line is that they're shooting for 95%. It says right here, the bill creates a vaccine protected children standard, thereby immunization rate goal for every school is 95%. So the goal is to get 95%. So what if 10% of the school is claiming religious immunity? Well, that's not going to fly, right? So they're going to say some of them don't apply. Because their goal is 95%. Do you think they're not going to try to hit that? Do you think that that marker is not going to be used to value and grade different schools based on what they're doing? Oh, well, look, your immunization record's too low. They already do that about cities. They already do that about schools right now. That they are, oh, this state has a really low immunization record. They already grade based on that. This will be used to talk about funding. This will be used to talk about all kinds of things. And it will be used to drive that number. Now it says the bill requires, as applicable, a practitioner who is licensed physician, physician's assistant, advanced practice nurse, or person authorized pursuant to Title 12 to administer immunizations within their scope of practice to students and to submit immunizations, medical or non-medical exemption data to the tracking system. Just like I said. Now, of course, what it says is requires. So now at this point, as a practitioner, you no longer have the right to advise them if you feel that they're not correct. It requires you to give them what you're told you're supposed to give them. And then it requires you to put their data in a tracking system. But of course, then it ridiculously claims the practitioner is not subject to regulatory sanction for noncompliance. That is the most outrageously false statement of I've ever seen. That happens right now. Right now, we see nurses and doctors and people get penalized even for suggesting something that goes against the, you know, scientific community of whatever they want to tell you is politicized. The bottom line is, not to go too far, guys, is this is exactly what this is saying. This bill approves, basically removes more, it lessens the possibility that you're even going to have the ability to claim a religious exemption. That's what it's doing. Bottom line. Now, as it says clearly, so we're very clear on this, the Senate must approve the House's amendments because it went back and forth already and they changed some things. So it has to be approved once again by the Senate before it goes to the governor's desk. I think very clearly this is going to pass. It's Colorado, but this is growing outward, guys, and it's going to happen because it's momentum and everyone's telling you you're a conspiracy theorist if you claim it, even as it's literally happening right in front of us. Think about how crazy that is. They're removing your possible exemptions. Just like Trump said, sorry, my volume was super high right there. Remember what Trump was saying before that, well, you know, we're not going to force it on you. And they remember what everyone else is saying before that, that, well, first we'll say it's, you know, here you can have it. And then once we get down to the people who said no, we'll corner them and make them take it, right? That's the idea. You start out with it being just, you know, it's your choice. And then it becomes mandatory, which is the case, which is always what they do. And that's where we're leading this into. It's growing slowly, pushing into it, getting to a place to where they can, I guess, use social pressure through schools and different people and the loudest 1% that listens only to mainstream media to force people to oblige. And of course, when people like us speak out and say things against it and saying, hey, you know, don't we have constitutional rights? Well, of course, they call you a foreign entity and censor you on Twitter, right? Which is what's happening everywhere. And this story is going to make you outraged because this is the kind of thing they do when they think no one's paying attention. The kind of thing where they pretend like, we can't allow this kind of manipulation and censorship and blah, look at China, look how bad Iran is, oh my God. And then they literally allow this company to work with somebody who is a known manipulator. In fact, on record, creating a false, I guess it's what you call it, a false flag or a psyop in regard in 2017. And you'll remember this. And let's not pretend like we don't know that Twitter and Facebook are directly, overtly tied to the government. So as it says, Twitter has removed thousands of accounts it claims were tied to Chinese and Russian information campaigns involved in manipulation efforts. Again, to think how ridiculous it is that we're listening to this, we're listening to them choose, and we're going to pretend like there aren't untold amounts of just Israeli bot farms, U.S. government bot farms that are actively trying to do this. And by there are literal documentaries about Israeli bot farms. Like, this is very clear stuff. There's ones in China and Russia, too. They're all over the place. The reality is that they're censoring people, most likely people who are arguing things that they don't like. Sort of how they already tried to do that during Syria timeframes. And like I already pointed out, like partisan girl, Syrian girl, who got called a Russian bot on the air. As a living person on TV, they said, "Are no, your claims are you're a Russian bot. Is that true?" It's like, I'm standing here. Right? This is what they do. So to listen to them tell you what you should, what should be removed is just simply censorship. I mean, that's censorship how, no matter how you spin it. Because unless you're going to remove, which you shouldn't be able to remove any of it. But if you're going to remove one, then you remove the others if you're going to be even with it. The bottom line is these companies shouldn't be removing anything. At the end of the day, these kind of political talking points, whether influenced by a government or whatever else, should be allowed. Now, obviously, there's caveats in regard to, you know, disgusting sexual content and overt graphic violence. I mean, these are basic things. And when we're talking about politics in particular, the bottom line is that they are censoring opinions. Doesn't matter where they come from. They're censoring opinions and then allowing the U.S. government to do whatever they want. Think of it like an argument where they're not allowing one side to talk. That's what they're doing. Now, its decision to team up with the Stanford Internet Observatory raises a red flag, and you'll see why. Twitter said it was disclosing 32,000 accounts to its archive of state-linked information operations. Now, let me ask you a thing. Do you think that they really do investigation and prove that these accounts are tied to the governments? Or do you think that they just say, well, look, they're parroting things that are clearly talking points as they've decided? Right? So all it would take is for you to actually just parrot things coming from a certain government and they would delete your account. Or maybe just if you have organic opinions of your own that just so happen to align with that, well, then you're a government talking point, right? That's what they're doing. It says every account and piece of content associated with these operations has been permanently removed. Now, the point is that one of Twitter's leading research partners in this effort is named as Stanford Internet Observatory, which describes itself as studying the abuse of internet with particular focus on social media. Now, what's important is that one of their main researchers, Renee DeRista, you should know quite well. You know why? Because she worked for a group called New Knowledge, which was an outfit that was busted by the New York Times for apparently running a disinformation campaign targeting American voters. You'll remember this. Remember, it was about Roy Moore. They made this entirely fake campaign, and this was meant to drive people away from a certain candidate. It was about them being backed by Moscow. Remember? It was completely fabricated. They were caught. Facebook even deleted their information, and yet now somebody involved in that is now again working with a different social media platform and trying to tell you that there are other groups that are being deleted. But now we're listening to them once again. I mean, this is just as ridiculous as the incestuous relationship between our governments, our government organizations. Like, this is just one, this was just jumping from one manipulative psyop group to the next and constantly deleting content and saying that you're being misled as they then sell you absolute falsities. The point is, this is what's used to stop people like us from telling you what's really going on everywhere. And of course, this is not just about coronavirus or COVID-19 or whatever you want to talk about. This is about everything. And as we can should see, these things are tied together because everything, as we said about COVID-19, is also being applied to riots or protesters or anything. All of it. In fact, now it's all being applied to Seattle, too. Weird how that works, right? It's continually applied wherever they need it to be applied. And the situation in regard to Seattle is, of course, something that is being used right now. And as I pointed out, Donald Trump has already talked about the Insurrection Act. And of course, it just didn't really work. Well, guess what this does? Opens that right up. Trump has even used the term insurrectionist in regard to the people in Seattle. So do you think he might just end up using that act? If he did, that will be, in my opinion, the last straw. That will be used against any protester of any kind resisting the government. That's what that will be. And I argue it'll probably never go away. And bringing us to that point, here they are framing this, of course, as anarchists. And that's not an accident, guys. So the anarchists are building a border wall? Okay. Yeah, Tammy, that means they're not anarchists. But see, because you're either too dense to realize what anarchism means or willing to go along with the obvious misrepresentation of the word, then okay, okie dokie then. This whole thing is ridiculous. These people are claiming they have their own, we're now the police, right? We have guns. We're enforcing this. We're enforcing the laws. We have a border wall, right? These are ridiculous concepts, especially for people who went in there saying, you know, we're fighting for the lack of, you know, we don't want a border wall. We don't want any police. Defund the police. Well, now we're the police. Now we have a wall. Talk about hypocrisy. The bottom line is, I mean, I think it should be clear. I do not support what's going on here. Not because I don't understand. Not because if this was an idea that I believe was genuine, then it would be something I could stand behind. The point is that what this is wrong. It is a manipulation. These people have nothing to do with the idea of anarchism or actual rebellion against the power structure. This is used against us. This is going to be used to create the justification to do everything they've already wanted to do. Now, that doesn't mean there's people involved here that believe they're doing the right thing. In my opinion, to my bones, I believe that this is being used from the top in order to create this and create the justification for the Insurrection Act, create the justification to push further out. And then, of course, roll right into the next pandemic. And now they've got complete control going forward right into 2020. But these are not anarchists. Anarchism is an ideology. It doesn't mean chaos. It means no rulers. It does not mean no rules. That's the misrepresentation. And of course, the government is desperate to make sure that you see the only ideology in the world that exists in the framework that doesn't give them a job. They need to make sure that you don't realize that's a possibility. The idea that there could be something that exists without the government overarching control system. That's why they name it anarchists, insurrectionist anarchists. Nope, that's not what they are. None of these things are what they're making it out to be. Is unarmed National Guard emboldening Seattle mob? Uh-oh. Now the fact that they're not armed is making it worse. So guess what? We've come full circle to now they're arguing we need to give them more arms, right? Not only do we need to not defund them, we need to give them more. Who would have thought? The ongoing chaos in Seattle is fueling new questions about whether decisions to disarm them have the Seattle police stand down are fanning the flames of protests and emboldening activists hell-bent on anarchy. I don't know. I mean, I do know why. But I don't know why it bothers me so much. I mean, it's a very basic word, and the definition is very clear. And whether Real Clear Politics or any of these groups, I mean, I mean, Max Blumenthal tweeted out saying that these are MI6 anarcho-neocons. And I'm like, come on, man. Anarcho-neocons? That doesn't even make sense. You can't be a neoconservative and then also be an anarchist of any kind. They are diametric opposites. But here we are, even people on the so-called independent media calling them anarcho-neocons. I mean, God, we need to stop playing their games. We need to stop being pulled into their manipulations and their misuse of words. Right? Now deep state means the Democrats and regime change means liberation, right? It's like they are taking these things and framing them how they want. It's very frustrating. Here's Trump tweeting out, well, we have to have law and order. You have to have strength. You have to do what you have to do. Well, no, Trump, actually, that's not how that works, right? You're allowed to do only what you're allowed and authorized to do within the law. That's what that should say. Not that we just have to do what we have to do. That, oh, well, these people are, we're going to say they're being violent or these are happening, so I guess we just have to do what we have to do and shoot tear gas and do. No. This embodies everything that's wrong right now. There are clear laws in place. There are clear restrictions to their power that they just don't care about. The hierarchy enslaving you is what they stands for. To say we just have to do what we have to do in order to stop them and have strength implies that they'll take whatever actions are necessary to accomplish that, including shooting people in the face with rubber bullets, which they're not supposed to do, including attacking people and beating them up and beating them within an inch of their life, even when they're not doing anything wrong, or arresting my journalist, Derek Brose, for simply recording what's happening. Guys, I mean, that's a personal example from TLAV and the Conscious Resistance. Derek Brose was arrested while filming as press and very clearly, repeatedly announced himself as such. And they simply said, we don't care. This is where we are, guys. And according to them, they just have to do what they have to do. Does that give you the impression that they have, that they realize that they're bound by the Constitution or that they're bound by anything? Or does that make you feel like that they're just bound by their own rules? The rampant lawlessness, the unaccountable power structure in which we find ourselves today. Now, here's Representative Rush, of all people, the very person involved with HR 666 and Bill Gates and the whole thing, says officers caught on camera lounging in campaign office amid looting. Now, of course, on one side of this manipulation, people will say, see, the Democrats are making it all happen. What I see is, see, the government is allowing this to be created so that it can be used. That's what I see. It's being used just like the Republicans are being. They're every side and, all, you know, in reality, the real power structure that doesn't care about your party paradigm, they're using this. They're allowing it to happen. The cops are standing down and it's all being pushed forward based on the same idea. And by the way, this isn't some hypothetical. The mayor even apologized already. Caught lounging while people were... I mean, understand that they allowed looters to do whatever they wanted, and then they went out and arrested a bunch of protesters as the people were lounging in there. And now we have this Seattle councilwoman just outright saying, by the way, as we called it from the beginning, that this was going to remain in the public hands. Right? We're going to allow this to maintain the way. And just so we're clear, this is not in public hands. That's not what this is right now. And I argue that maybe, just maybe, how it began would have been a little bit different than what it's become. And as always, let me ask you this, guys. If, just for sake of conversation, let's say this was completely natural, organic, these people were just fighting for freedom and they wanted their own autonomous zone. If that actually happened, and that is what happened, let's just say that's for sake of conversation. Do you think that the government would just let it happen and be like, okay, fine, we respect that? Or do you think they would do what they always do in every situation around the world? You know, send in provocateurs, send in people to cause chaos, and then point to that chaos and be like, oh, we can't allow that. We have to go in. Doesn't that sound familiar? Sort of how what they did in Iraq and Afghanistan and Venezuela and Bolivia and everywhere all the time and Syria and all these. Oh, well, look, they just shot somebody, even though we prove later that it was a complete lie. And in fact, it was them that shot people. Happens over and over and over. History's clear. So here we are again. As I keep pointing out, we are now under U.S. sanctions. American people are now being regime changed by their own government. We are being forced into a corner and made to feel desperate. So we pray and plead for any government solution. That's what this is. That's what's happening. So my point is that this is happening. And even if it was organic from the beginning, they made sure it went out of control. They may, I mean, look, and all the reports we're getting from anybody about people being raped and robbed and all the crime up 300%. That's all coming from officials that are reporting on anecdotal reports. They even say that when they're reporting. I watched a Tucker Carlson video today, and the police individual is saying, we have anecdotal reports about things happening like this. And of course, Tucker reports it as these things are happening, right? So, it's happening on every side of the two-party paradigm, even the ones you think are a little bit better than the others. That's not what they said. They said, we have anecdotal reports. So you're telling me that somebody who maybe has a political intention might lie about that? Sure, that could happen. You're telling me that the people in charge in official positions, including the people in the police department, may not have a vested interest to side with certain government officials? I mean, come on, guys. I'm not even saying that it's not happening. I mean, the point is, I would argue the government would 100% make that happen. If it didn't happen organically, which is also possible. That the bottom line is, let's not pretend like they wouldn't drive it to this point in order to take control of it. Which is what they've done every single time, including verifiably with Occupy Wall Street. Remember, there was an FBI informant that led that from the top into the ground. That's what happened. That's why they failed. And that's what they're probably doing here in the same way. But that's why my point is, remaining in the public hands. Well, it's not in the public hands. It's now in the control of an isolated group that's saying that they're autonomous. So for her to pretend like this is part, you know, it's just Seattle people that want to speak their mind and we're allowing them to have a public square. This is a direct and overt misrepresentation. But the right is doing the same thing. But the point is, they're both doing that. So the right stands with the right, the left stands with the left, and they create a war. Just like they want to do everywhere else in the world, because that's all they know. And when they do that, they can achieve whatever the hell they want to achieve. Now, this is obviously only criticizing the left, because it's a right-leaning individual. But the point is, this is right. But the sad thing is, that this is Jack Posobiec. He can't wrap his mind around that Fox does the same thing. Or he doesn't care to point it out. But this is still correct. Check this out. This is CNN saying, right-wing media says Antifa militants have seized part of Seattle. Well, local authorities say otherwise. Which, I don't know, I've seen local authorities mixed on that. But then here they are reporting on the Oregon standoff. Face it, Oregon building takeaways, terrorism. It's a good point. Now, I didn't have time to find an example, but I guarantee you I could have found any number of examples from both CNN and Fox News doing the same thing, contradicting themselves. I mean, look, how many times I could point out 1,000 different Donald Trump tweets where he's saying, how dare you rule by executive order? And then he talks about ruling by, or how dare, you know, like talking about Obama golfing when he's out here golfing, or all these different things where he's constantly contradicting himself or saying one thing back then that he now does, you know, on and on and on. But the problem is that we can't pull ourselves away from that. Or I argue specifically people like this are the major social media influencers that will never, regardless of whether they see the truth or not, this is their business model. It's all about picking a side. But reality is that this is true, and it happens on both sides, but that this is the ridiculous narrative, that we can point to one and say, that's crazy, and that's terrorism, and the other one is complete freedom. When in reality, at the core value, it's essentially the same idea, except the fact that the Oregon standoff concept was an armed action, whereas the actions here in Seattle were allowed to happen by government officials. So that's quite a different exchange. Nonetheless, I still find the point to be valid, but obviously the armed action changes everything. And that's why I said that they allowed it so it could happen. You can't call this an insurrection if they were let in by the government and the government is still supporting them. But that's why it's happening, because it'll be used to divide you. Guys, this is a setup. You are being fooled. And listen to James Corbett, as always, nailing it with this excellent point.
It's not. No, when they say reimagine policing, there is actually a specific corporate / governmental context to that phrase, which has been bandied about for over a decade in the corporate world to mean a very specific thing, essentially the technocratic takeover of what we have thought of as policing. The policeman walking the beat, you know, trying to keep the peace, is a horse and buggy concept from the, you know, the previous century. That they don't need that anymore, not in a world of facial recognition and CCTV, interlinked CCTV cameras and drones and surveillance bots and contact tracing and scanning all of your cell phone data in real time with their fake cell phone towers and all of that. No, policing now is can be 99% automated so that you never even see the people who are watching everything you do. And eventually, the person who's going to come after you and enforce the laws of the land are not going to be physical, breathing, flesh and blood human being policemen. They're going to be surveillance robots, police robots of some sort. And they can't be racist. So problem solved, right, guys? Don't worry, there won't be any more police. There will just be the attack dogs of the police state. Yay! That is the real context of this whole reimagining of policing that's going on.
The way that's such a great point is because this is the breakdown that's independent of the two-party deception, right? This whole idea that, oh, well, we're gonna, you know, the momentum builds to where we need to do something, right? Well, we need to change something. And even if it's based on things you actually believe in or things that are actually legitimate concerns, they're gonna take it, they're gonna use it and say, reimagine the police, and it will build in a direction that benefits them, using your ideas and your platitudes to stand on and push in their own agenda, just like everything. Right? Ron Paul always points this out, that they always, people plead with the government, please, government, do something to fix this problem. And they come out with an idea that's named as if it's fixing the problem. And all it ultimately tends to do is codify that problem into law. So now, guess what? It's not a problem anymore because it's legal. What do you know? It's like the Patriot Act, like the War Power, any number of these things, which all it ultimately did was justify the thing they were already doing that was illegal, as if that somehow removes the problem. No, the problem exists. They just gave themselves the veneer of legitimacy. And that's what the reimagining of police will do, using the things that you care about. Until we can see past the two-party deception, this will always continue to happen.
Is not going to be what the people are clamoring for, unless, of course, people actually have a specific plan in mind for what they mean when they say defund police or reimagine policing. If there are not specific points that these protests actually hold the politicians to, then what hope will we have of stumbling away from instead of directly into the maws of that technocratic nightmare?
Really great point. A great show today, by the way. James Evan Pilato and James Corbett, great show, as always. They gave us a good shout-out, by the way, today, talking about both Derek and myself in regard to the work we've been doing, and specifically Derek's work on the fluoride trial. Which, again, I really, really hope you'll take the time to look further into if you haven't already. We have an article up on The Last American Vagabond right now that he wrote before. And again, like I said, I'll be putting up his other one soon in regard to his update on what's been happening. But if you want to look right now, hopefully you wait till the show's done, you can look at his live feed and you can see all this stuff. Well, just realize this, guys. This is what's always been happening. It's a deception. They're using you. And they need your emotional outrage to drive it. And that's why they use emotional manipulation. Guys, this is what's always happening. They want to emotionally manipulate you because we're irrational when we're emotional. Like the point that I've made in the past, right? That we've all had that experience in your life where, you know, you hear something, and usually it's in high school or whatever else, but some people later in their lives, where you hear something of, oh, you heard that your girl or somebody's messing around, and so you freak out. And you come out and you start yelling, and I heard this and I heard that. And then you find out it wasn't true or so on. And then you realize, man, I'm so sorry. I lashed out. I wasn't thinking straight. That's what happens. Because you don't think clearly because your emotions get the better of you. They know that. They abuse that. They utilize it in every possible agenda. They show you a picture of a dead child or you know, Mr. Oman in the back of the ambulance. Remember that? A little child with the blood in his head in Syria. And you later find out that they took him from his father and used him. And he wasn't even part. It was a manipulation. They do that because you go, oh, that sad child. And remember, his picture was on every single news outlet for a week because people were outraged. How dare Assad be part of that, even though he wasn't? Who cares now? Because people are outraged and they harness that emotional outrage and they drive it into whatever the hell they want it to be. Now, we need to see this, guys. We need to see how this is being used to change your perception about things that we should really clearly be on the same page about. I mean, think about the evolution of just Trump's administration in regard to, I mean, this applies to any president, but in particular, this administration we're talking about. How suddenly Guantanamo went from being like the absolute scar on the face of America to, hey, freedom, right? Because we're going to put Clinton in there. Think about how ridiculous that is. That is propaganda. That is social engineering. But this is what we're doing today. We're seeing it everywhere. Here's a good example. This is Richard Greenell, you know, director of National Intelligence. saying, well, or and this is his breaking, Microsoft has announced it will not sell facial recognition technology to the police. That should be a collective cheer from the American people. Hooray! Even though I doubt that's ever going to stop, or Microsoft is just saying that to get points with people, it should be still pointed to as a good thing, that the momentum is leaning in the direction of the people. Or at least that's how it appears. But no, he says they should now be barred from federal government contracts. There should be consequences for not selling technology to police departments. Think about the narrative and how that's being framed. Of course, all the supporters of Trump will scream, yay, because we're freedom patriots and whatever the mentality is. And by the way, it's just as crazy in regard to the left and the same things they do. I always have to say that because people who don't know the show may hear just that one point and think, oh, he's anti-Trump. I'm not. I'm anti-two-party system. And both sides are just as much of a parody today. The reality, though, is that this is saying that we should be mad that these companies are not giving facial recognition technology to police departments so they can use it against you. So they can create a technocratic control surveillance network that will be placed on street corners and at the entrances of your buildings, just like now exists in China? Yeah, that's what they're trying to create. So when they say we don't want this to happen because suddenly the momentum is that the police are doing bad things and that we can all see it for the briefest of moments, they try to turn the narrative. And you know what? It is gathering momentum. And it really bothers me. Now, recognize that Richard Greedell, as I said, is the director of National Intelligence. But this is another article. U.S. intelligence bill takes aim at commercial spyware makers. Interesting. Now, this is, again, a signal that at the very least, the momentum has shifted to the point to where they feel like they have to give, you know, basically placate us. Because I argue they never actually want to do these things. They do it because they want you to think they're on your side. Until you stop paying attention, then it goes right back into Patriot Act zone, right back into anti-BDS zone and all the things they're doing for things that have nothing to do with you. But this is interesting. Okay, this is a newly released draft intelligence bill passed by the Senate Intelligence Committee last week, and it would require the government to detail the threats posed by commercial spyware and surveillance technology. Well, that's interesting because, yes, this is something that on its face seems like a good thing. That they're saying, whoa, maybe we shouldn't allow these companies to just frivolously sell spy equipment to both American companies and foreign companies alike that are used to spy on you and through your technology, right? It says the annual intelligence authorization bill, published Thursday, would take aim at private sector spyware makers. Now, understand that that bill is chock full of other things that I'm not going to get into, but this is an important point to make. Like NSO Group or Hacking Team, which are companies who literally build spyware and hacking tools designed to surreptitiously break into a victim's device for conducting surveillance. And yeah, they sell those to your government. But let's pretend like they don't use them on you, right? It's ridiculous. Both NSO Group and Hacking Team say that they only sell their hacking tools to governments because that makes you feel better, right? But critics say that the customers have included despotic and authoritarian regimes like Saudi Arabia and Iran, one of the leading allies of the U.S. government. And everybody acknowledges them one of the most despotic regimes in the world, but somehow we can't understand why that doesn't make sense, right? We're literally destroying countries based on the idea that they're dictators, and yet we work with the leading despot regime of Saudi Arabia. It's just a disgusting joke. And then force them in on the Human Rights Council and the UN. I mean, it's the kind of overt control these governments have to change these realities is sickening. We all see who they are. But the point is that they're selling them to those groups. So guess what Saudi Arabia is doing? Spying on you through Twitter, because they have a huge stake in Twitter. Spying on a lot of different things, or any other governments. Or by the way, I don't believe for a second that they're not selling them to private high-end clients. But it says if passed, the bill would instruct the Director of National Intelligence, this same person who's calling for these police departments to be, or excuse me, these companies to be penalized for making their own decisions in regard to who they sell to. Think about how crazy that is. These are private companies that they're saying they should have consequences for not doing what we tell them to do. Is that not the tenets of fascism, guys? We need to wake up. It says the bill would instruct the Director of National Intelligence, Greenell, to submit a report to both the House and Senate Intelligence Committees within 6 months on the, quote, threats posed by the use of foreign governments and entities of commercially available cyber intrusion and other surveillance technology against U.S. citizens, residents, and federal employees. Now, this will be used and aimed at the enemies, when it's ostensibly not what it appears to be, right? Threats posed by foreign governments. Okay, so it's going to be aimed at Iran, it's going to be aimed at Syria, it's going to be aimed at Russia and China, and that's all it's going to be. They're not going to try to pretend to say, well, the U.S. doesn't do that because we're righteous and we do good things all the time, and that's what it's going to be. But just realize that at the very least, they felt like they had to give you, you know, just, what's the term they use? They just have to, you know, give you, I'm blanking on the term, lip service. There we go. Just give you lip service to the idea, oh yeah, it's going to happen. We're gonna hold them accountable and then just forget about it. But I find it ridiculous that Green Elves is going to be the one that's going to enforce this, as he's literally calling for the opposite. It's a joke. These people do not care about your security or safety or your rights. And their actions over and over and over make that abundantly clear. And the foreign policy part is going to make that even more clear. Senate challenges Trump with NDAA. Trump threatens veto. And this is an interesting tie-in from the same point before we even get fully into foreign policy. This is yet another example of the momentum in a way. It says, while Democrat-controlled House often pushes policy challenges to Trump in the annual NDAA, which is always full of the most horrid things, countering information into, you know, basically Obama's countering, I forget the frame of it now. I just reported on it the other day. Countering foreign information, blah, blah, blah. It was used against Americans, right? That the NDAA was in 2012, I believe, was when they created the Smith Modernization Act, which legalized propaganda in this country against you, right? These are always the things they do. An NDAA under Obama legalized indefinite detention for Americans. Every year they do these things, and it's called the Defense Authorization Act, as if they're defending you, as they pass laws against you. It's a sick joke. But it says it is unusual for the Republican Senate to do so. Still, the new version pushed enough to lead the White House to basically threaten a veto. The Senate Armed Service Committee allocated $6 billion to confront China. Again, $6 billion. Do you realize what that could do for Americans, guys? Does any American actually believe out there that we should be sending things out and conducting things to, quote, confront China? Can you show me where they're, I mean, right now, of course, the hardcore Republicans are thinking that they're trying to poison you and, you know, create, I mean, there's no evidence to that. Do I believe they're capable of it? Of course I do. When I see evidence of it, I'll happily report on it. But they're trying to frame this as something that's not there. And just like before, it was about, quote, confronting Russia. It's just another way to spend billions of your dollars to continue to bloat the military for their own agendas. Remember how it was and what happened with Russia? Right? Were we confronting Russia because they were about to overthrow the country? No, there was nothing happening. And here we are. And now they're just transitioning into China. And it's just like they're transitioning into every other new phase. AIDS over to coronavirus and whatever else. They are just rolling in their same agendas into the new age. Just like the Flexner Report into petrochemicals. Now we're going from petrochemicals into the Gates Report into the technocracy. And it says, which is new, but in keeping with mounting U.S. tension and hostility, the funding is more than requested. It includes, again, of course, yeah, we'll just give you more, right? Trump is a Russian spy, but here's more than you asked for, because that lines up, right? And includes missile defense and joint plans with regional nations, right? These are all people that are right now saying no. Remember, we just talked about this. Japan, everyone over in Pacific are saying, we don't want anything to do with your missiles. And as we go forward in foreign policy, you're going to see that the momentum is not working for the United States right now, the government. People around the world are standing up against them, which hasn't happened a lot. Now, the amendment that is forbidding, this is very interesting. And this is the part that he's going to veto. Think about this. Trump is threatening to veto something that gives him money to confront China, which is clearly what he wants to do, simply because Senator Kaine added an amendment that forbids the use of military against peaceful protesters. That's literally what it says. Forbidding the use of military against peaceful protesters. It doesn't say the military can't be used against rioters, even though it shouldn't be, because that's a violation of posse comitatus, whatever. The point is, it says very clearly, peaceful. And Trump is saying, no way, I'm going to veto it. I mean, how does that show? That is a very clear example. Whether you think he's going to or not, he wants the ability to be able to use that, even against peaceful protesters. Or he's going to argue that they're going to frame peaceful protesters as they're peaceful, but they're actually rioters. But it doesn't matter how you think they're going to frame it. The verbiage is clear. The thing says peaceful. So we could then argue that they're rioters down the line. No, it doesn't matter. He is threatening to veto because the amendment literally states that the military can't be used against peaceful protesters, and apparently he's not okay with that. Pretty damn stark, right? That is on the nose. Now, the Senate also wants bases named after Confederate leaders renamed. This is the Senate, by the way. Which is what Trump is saying he'd veto the whole bill over. Oh, okay, well, excuse me. I argue that it's both. But, of course, it's in regard to the Confederate leaders. Again, which I disagree with. I hate the idea of revisionism. Right? To change the idea. Like, the names are there because they're part of history. I mean, here's an example. I went to Pershing Elementary, right? Okay, Pershing was the general who allowed the Spanish flu to happen. Pershing was the general who allowed Americans to die for the Kansas flu, which is what it actually was, allowed them to die because they wanted to continue the war. So they knew it and they exacerbated the problem and then framed Spain for it, right? And we still call it the Spanish flu. I don't want that person to be represented. I don't think General Pershing should be respected because he killed a lot of people of Americans and lied to us. But you see, the point is that it's only about the things that they feel outraged about, right? Well, it's because they're Confederates and that's racist and blah, blah, blah. And the point is history, guys. And it's not about removing the statues. As I keep pointing out, it's about removing them from history. Very different. And that is not okay, because history needs to be remembered, the good and the bad. Otherwise, it will be used against you again. Frustrating. It really is. Now, more foreign policy. New evidence, and this is a good article from Mint Press News, suggests Turkey is preparing for a Libya-style military intervention in Yemen, of all places. So here, Turkey has just picked up the pieces and running with U.S. foreign policy now. Openly going against Assad, about to invade Yemen, going along with all this stuff. I mean, Turkey burning Syrian wheat fields. I mean, they're right in path with this, which is basically challenging everything they said they were doing. How in the world can you actually justify Turkey pushing in to Yemen? This is the world's worst humanitarian crisis. People are starving, hundreds of thousands. But sure, let's just let them push in and make it worse. And of course, the U.S. will not criticize it. It's disgusting. I mean, this is going to continue to happen. I mean, guys, do you realize how frustrating it is that Yemen can literally be in the situation it's been in? This was in a catastrophic, dire state before all this started. And don't forget that none of this has gone away. None of it. They've only increased it. Saudi Arabia is still pushing in. They're still bombing. They're still attacking. People are still dying. They're still starving them. There's still a blockade. It hasn't stopped. Think about how crazy that is. Imagine if there was somebody blockading entry ports into the U.S. that was starving American cities, and they just said, we'll just let it keep going until this all passes. No big deal, right? We care more about that. Well, they're Americans, right? Well, these are people too, guys. People with families and lives and dreams and ambitions. But who cares about them, because they're way over there and because Israel doesn't care and because Saudi Arabia is involved? It's gross that we even pretend this is normal. And this is why people are losing their minds, because they've rationalized the worst thing you could possibly imagine and pretend like that's normal. And then when that same person goes out and embodies the same mentality and shoots up a bunch of people because they're going to ruin the country and he goes to prison, that doesn't make sense to him. Well, I did what the government's doing, right? Fighting for freedom, right? U.S. general talks down Afghan pullout. Guess what? All the things they've been saying, we're going to leave Afghanistan, we're going to leave Iraq, we're going to leave everywhere. Guess what? They're all not happening. Surprise, surprise. And you know what? All the people who support Trump are probably continuing to say that we got out of Afghanistan, we got out of Syria, we got out of Iraq, we're leaving Germany. Nope, none of them are happening. And they probably won't, because they usually don't. And even when they do slightly happen, usually it's like, okay, we're pulling everybody. And then it turns into maybe a third of it or maybe a fourth. And then they don't even leave. They just go over the border somewhere else and they don't even go home, right? Remember how insulting it was for Trump to pretend that all people were leaving Syria and then they're going home to their families. And he made that big heartfelt thing in front of the White House and told the families, your husbands are going to be home, your daughters, your sons, your wives are going to be home soon. None of them went home. Most of them just went over the border, and then they ended up going right back into Syria. So imagine how hard that was for those families. But you know what? They didn't care or even think about those families. All they thought about was their agenda. Well, now they're not leaving Afghanistan. Gee, almost like exactly what I said was going to happen. Somebody just commented, I keep saying that, and I keep thinking about it, so I keep doing it. I'm not the I told you so type, and you guys know that. I'm trying to be funny. I guess I should explain that. But somebody reached out and was like, you keep saying I told you so, and it blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. I'm allowed to point out when I make things that when I called them correctly, but I'm never one to be like, nah, 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 see, told you. That's just not what we should be doing. It doesn't accomplish anything. But it's important to recognize, and I'm saying we, guys, understand. I'm not saying me. You are all just as much a part of this as I am. Whether we're talking about the people in the Discord chat or my wonderful mods, like a star I can see right there, people that are actively sharing information. By the way, I know Star's doing her own show now, which is fantastic, which I hope you all check out. But the point is that we all work together. Even just seeing your comments in the chat, right? We are part of this together. That's what's really happening. So when we call these things, when we see it in the beginning, and we know it based on the history and the people involved, and we say, here's what's going to happen, and then it happens, we need to recognize that. We do, not just me. And here we are again, blaming the Taliban. What do you know, right? The Taliban, the very group that's supposed to be fighting. I mean, think about how crazy it is. Actually, you know what? I think I have an older point that I want to drag over. Yep, there you go. Not older, but tied in with this. And I'll get to it in a second. Somebody shared that with me. The Taliban, as I said, was a group that they used to justify the invasion of a whole country. Of course, with Al-Qaeda, but the Taliban was a huge part of it. A terrorist organization, right? That group hasn't changed at all. They are the same group today that they were when they justified the invasion. Except now they're pretending they're going to have talks with them. So at the very least, none of this was all of this was useless. The $7 trillion, all the Americans that were killed, the destruction of their country, the theft of lithium and oil and poppy and opium and everything that we've robbed that country blind was all based on nothing. And now we're dealing. Well, I argue that's what it was about entirely. But now they're just going to deal with the very group that they claimed they were going to invade. Imagine if suddenly tomorrow they said they were going to start making deals with ISIS, which I argue will never happen. Not because they're not already working with them, which is the whole point, but because that's just going to be their useful tool forever. But imagine that tomorrow. It's the same thing. The difference is the Taliban drifted into the distance for 10, 20 years, and people just don't talk about it anymore as much. So suddenly, they're just this different group. Nope, same thing. It's a terrorist group that they're dealing with. Just like they went on to deal with Saddam Hussein. Just like they went on to deal, or actually they dealt with him and then turned him into a bad guy. And they dealt with bin Laden and then turned him into a bad guy. You know, they have a tendency to work with, champion, and arm fund and support the very people who end up becoming the biggest terrorists of the world. Isn't that funny? Isn't that interesting? But I guess I'm just a crazy conspiracy theorist. But guess what? We're not leaving. They're talking down the Afghan pullout. So guess what? It's not going to happen, guys. And just so we're aware, here is. This guy is a whistleblower of sorts. I'm not incredibly familiar with his work. But nonetheless, this is very clear. Afghan warlord Abdul Rasul Saif employed, mentored, and he says trained the 9/11 mastermind, which I don't agree with that sentiment, but trained this individual, which our government tells us was the mastermind. His name is all over the 9/11 Commission report, right here. His name is all over the place in regard to training the very person that they're telling us was involved with 9/11, right? Here is Mike Pompeo shaking that person's hand today. If that doesn't explain to you everything you need to see, I don't know what will. It's just like seeing John McCain standing next to the leader of ISIS, right? How do we not realize what that shows you? It's baffling to me. This is the guy right here. You can see him. Okay. Oh, there you go. That's actually, oh, well, that's what I wanted to do. That's the guy. Right. This is the very person, as just to make it clear, who is listed in their own documents in regard to training the person they claim was responsible. I don't believe any of their narrative, but the point is it's their narrative. And yet nonetheless, here's Pompeo shaking the hand of the guy who they say trained the guy who led 9/11. How can you even justify that? Because you want to make a deal with the Taliban because it suits your political agendas? Well, then, bottom line, they don't care about terrorism. And it's all a big illusion. Well, which is what we should be seeing today. That's the reality. Trump's touted troop pullout from Germany is more rift than gift. Guess what? Now Germany's going, are you going to pull these people out? Because basically they said they were going to do it. And now Germany is just, basically Germany heard about the pullout from the media. They didn't even know about it. I argue it's all BS. The whole thing is meant to make it seem like he's doing things that his supporters want. You know, not being the policeman of the world, not doing all these things that they're obviously increasing around the world, but Trump just keeps saying we're doing things that they don't. We're leaving Afghanistan. We're leaving Germany, as they don't. But yet in the minds of the supporters, it's already happened. But the bottom line is, Germany hasn't heard a word about this. And now they're going, okay, is it going to happen? Are we doing anything? Is this even real? Right, that's what this is talking about right now. Germany is basically calling their bluff. Okay, then on top of that, guess what? U.S. Iraq talks promise you U.S. troop withdraw fall short of the timeline. Big surprise. So again, the thing they were continuing to say, we're going to leave some troops from Iraq. We're going to talk about leaving troops from Iraq. We're going to pull back troops. Guess what? They just fell short of their timeline. It still may happen, but I argue it was never going to. Do you really think that they can literally vote to have the U.S. troops move entirely? Iraq's parliament voted to have U.S. government leave Iraq. And as they pretend to respect their sovereignty, they just said, too bad, no, we're not going to do it. Which means they don't at all respect their sovereignty. That's all a big illusion. They don't care about anything but their own agenda. So they're going to occupy illegally Iraq once again, or continually. And if they're not going to leave when they're voted out, do you really think Trump's going to wake up one day and be like, hey, let's pull some troops out? The only reason that would happen is if they were going to move them to Syria, move them towards Iran, or continue some kind of agenda. They're not bringing these people home. We are a war state. We will always be at war because that is the agenda that drives this country. It's crazy to see this, right? But they lie, and they continue to push things forward in the other direction. And this is all increasing, guys. As I continue to say, the foreign policy momentum has gone right back into full gear. And again, I think about how crazy it is, the idea that everybody was pulled back. The world was calling for a ceasefire because of how dangerous everything was. And now it's like because of the protests, it just doesn't matter. I mean, how do we not see how crazy and how flimsy that is? Right, suddenly they have all these aircraft carriers with sick people, so they're pulling everybody back. And now because there were protests and we're looking at some other story, they're sending out their aircraft carriers again, sending out their jets again. Everything's going out. U.S. sends F-35s toward the middle, likely target Iran. Okay, we're right back in the mix of things. Are we not concerned about it again? Apparently not. Sending F-35s to target Iran for what? Again, this needs to be very clear to you. Before all this, they were continually feeding you lines about stuff Iran was doing with no evidence. Which, by the way, 99% of it, as far as I could tell, were complete fabrications. But now, there's nothing happening. The only thing you can see right now is the U.S. making moves by South China Sea. The U.S. making moves in the Persian Gulf. The U.S. moving around and saying, you're being dangerous while we're right up against your country. That's what we're seeing right now. It needs to show you that that's always what's been happening. So now they're sending out more F-35s to target Iran based on what? The arguments they made 6 months ago? We need to wake up and see what's going on, guys. This is a military state. And they're using coronavirus against you. Because we're finally waking up to the military state that it is. The U.S. Air Force deploys spy drones in the South China Sea. Right? Because China's the one, right? Now, in this case, I'm talking about the one being aggressive, because that's the argument, that this is what it's all about. Now, again, it's very important for us to see what this is on the map, right? So we're staring at the map. Here is the South China Sea, okay? Just recognize how close this is. I mean, you could make it technically here, anywhere in this circle right here, the South China Sea, okay? But you scroll out, just recognize how obviously close that is to China. The U.S. way over here, okay? The United States government is sending their ships, their drones, everything way over here, right up against China in their area, right by Taiwan. Because they're using Taiwan for their agenda against China. And remember, they're even talking about putting missiles over here in Japan to threaten China and South Korea, and Japan saying, hell no, we don't want your missiles, but they're going to force it in anyway. My point being, as they're trying to make it out to be China's the one being aggressive, Russia's being the one aggressive, imagine if China sent their drones over here or over here. What do you think the U.S. government would do? The media would lose its mind. They would say that it was a war act and they're threatening war and they're encroaching on our territory. It would be the biggest hyperbolic statement of the decade. But here is the U.S. doing it right here constantly. I just don't know how that can be any more clear. Back to the article. The U.S. Air Force is deploying these spy drones in the South China Sea. Spy drones. I mean, I can hear what they would be saying right now if China had a bunch of spy drones circling around near Mexico. They would lose their minds. I mean, it would be constant. They would be screaming and bleeding about how they're trying to, this is an act of war and it's a con. I just can't get past how ridiculous that is. Now, good, look, I'm arguing that neither one should be doing these things. But the reality is it's pretty much the U.S. doing it. And then the moment that China comes out and gets anywhere near them in their side of the world, they're being aggressive and they're coming too close to our ships. It's all about framing. It is always about framing. As the U.S. ramps up Syrian oil plunder, dispatches 50 tankers to Hasaka. Dang it, that was the other thing I wanted to remember to find. I'm not going to try to search for it right now, but you've seen it on this show. I've played you many times. And this was right when this first started, right when they occupied the oil fields. Illegally, mind you, which has always been illegal. We saw a string of trucks, oil trucks, moving oil out of Syria. Now, this was happening right in the beginning. And I argue it's always been happening. Since they've had ISIS controlling these fields, they were stealing oil through ISIS because ISIS is a proxy of the U.S. government and Israel and Saudi Arabia. And that's verified, as much as people wanted to pretend like it's not. The evidence is overwhelmingly clear. The point is that it's all used to continue to rob this country blind. Here it is. Perfect. I did find it. Now, we showed you this at the time, guys. This was in Syria. This was right. This was, I think, a couple of weeks after they occupied the oil fields. We see the evidence of these trucks flooding out of Syria, taking the oil. So let's not pretend like this hasn't constantly been happening. It's a petrol truck. You can see it right on the side. So here we are again. U.S. ramps up Syrian oil plunder, dispatching 50 tankers to Hasaka. They are stealing from these people, burning their oil for their wheat fields, burning their, I think it was rye or barley fields, starving them. They are trying to punish the Syrian people for not allowing them to take their country. But it's all normal and okay, right? Because we're the good guys, right? But that's the point. As I just said, Trump is imposing sanctions on the International Criminal Court right as they begin to probe into things just like this, right as they begin to probe into the U.S. war crimes in Afghanistan, and of course, right as they begin to probe into Israel war crimes. Think about how crazy it is for an international criminal court to start to investigate this country, and they stand up and say, you're under sanctions for doing your job. Think about that. Of course, the argument is, well, you have no jurisdiction because we're not doing, we're enforcing ourselves. Right. The argument is that countries that don't enforce their own, that's when the ICC comes in. I haven't seen a better example in my lifetime of a country that will not enforce against its own. There is no accountability for the powerful in this country at all. So it is the best example I've ever seen for the ICC to step in. Now, I am not talking about in anything other than holding individual representatives accountable for their actions. I am not talking about a UN influence or manipulation within our country in regard to the people. What I'm talking about is people like Tony Blair, like George Bush, like Obama, like Hillary Clinton, like Donald Trump, that are people that have ordered and been behind egregious war crimes and deserve to go to jail. That's what this is about. And that's what these kind of organizations do. Right? This wouldn't be somebody that steps in and occupies the United States and forces in their laws on our soil. No, this would be somebody that they'd be pulled to the Hague, right? They would go to an international court and be tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity, right? That's what these people need to be held accountable for. But the point is, the moment that they bring this forward, they attack them and tell them that you're wrong and you're unaccountable and you're the one, right? That's like a child, right? You're committed the crime. No, you did, right? That's what this is. But guess what, guys? The world at one point was swayed and taken by the power of the U.S. government. Well, today, they're not taking it. People are not buying it. You EU officials are condemning Trump's actions. Condemning them, which is pretty intense for what used to happen. Condemning them, condemning the sanctions against the International Court. It says a top European Union official condemned President Trump's decision to authorize sanctions against the International Court, calling it a matter of serious concern. This was, of course, an executive order, which, again, I find laughable that we can pretend an executive order can influence anything, first of all, outside the United States, and a matter of fact, outside the executive branch. An executive order is only supposed to influence and affect the executive branch. But today, the executive orders rule this country. You can write down what you want on a piece of paper and make it law because of our ridiculous broken country that we're in right now, or rather government, to make it very clear. The country is exactly what I'm trying to save. The government is the problem. Very different things. American people are the country. The government is something that's supposed to work for us, but which clearly doesn't. But of course, we sign an executive order that says that they over there on the other side of the world have to do what we say or are not allowed to do things where we... I mean, it's a joke. But that's what they're doing. They're actually telling them they can't even investigate Israel. How in the world does the U.S. think they can tell an international body what they can do in another country they're not even involved in? They're not even. It's crazy the kind of power that they think they have. But now, their allies are saying, sorry, we're not backing you here. This authorized harsh penalties, not just against the ICC workers, but their families and anyone who helps them. That is not the actions of an honest government. That is the actions of a corrupt, rogue entity that's trying to cover up its crimes. They're just looking into the actions of people in Afghanistan. Now, it says that this, an online press conference, it says this is a matter of serious concern, as you can understand, because we, as European Union, are steadfast supporters of the International Criminal Court. Borrell said that he learned of the very bad news, that his meeting was coming to an end. And he said, I think that for sure I can reiterate our support for this institution. So even as Trump's saying that, he's standing with them. A key factor in bringing justice and peace, it must be respected and supported by all nations, and will analyze the decision in order to assess its full implications. This looks really bad for the U.S. government. Really bad. Now, if, let's say, they had stood with them, they would have had the momentum to make it seem moral and just. When it never really is. But because their allies are not backing them, it's being shown for what it is. A petty act to try to hide your crimes. France calls on U.S. to withdraw sanctions targeting the ICC staff. This is coming everywhere. We need to see this for what it is. This is an obvious cover-up. And even their allies are calling it out. I guess that's it. That's funny. I thought that I had something else after that. But the bottom line is that we need to see who these people are and what they're actually doing and all the things that they've continued to push forward, right? The fact that they're willing to threaten the families of people that are simply doing their job, let alone the people doing their job, needs to show you the depths to which these people will go. And it wasn't just John Bolton. This is the Trump administration. This is Donald Trump himself putting this forward. These people are off the rails. And as we can see from the beginning to the end here, that they've set this up, that they are using old plans, creating financial bailout plans before it starts, meeting in Africa to discuss things that benefit the very people. I mean, it's all laid out in front of you. And now we know that the numbers are less and they're still forcing it in. They're using other distraction measures and other things going on to sell you on this idea. And the only thing we have to do right now is stand up. Take action. Speak your mind. Do not be afraid, right? You're not alone. We see what you see. Stand up for yourself. You're not crazy. We will all be fighting this together. And that's what we need to understand. And the moment that we can realize that we have that momentum, we will change the world. The problem is the two-party paradigm is stopping a good chunk of these people from breaking free, but we're just about to get there. All we need to do is just keep fighting, keep pushing. Tomorrow is a perfect day to start that revolution. Stand up. And no, I'm not talking about violence. Stand up tomorrow. Speak your mind. Make flyers. Go out there and actually make this happen. Now, here, I can actually do this real quick. Just in case you guys haven't seen this yet. I know I've shared this a bunch of times, but I want you guys to be able to see this, share it, even if it just takes you clipping the image from my show. Here is... Oh, I don't want to... Oh, well. Oh, look at that. Look at that. This is on Sunderland Magazine. Look at that. Well, okay, then just so you guys are aware, I want to go back just so you guys can see the full image. Just so you guys are aware, Derek has been getting contacts from people all over the world. All over the world. Multiple countries. You're not crazy. Don't listen to what they're saying. People see what you see. Now, that doesn't mean that we need to believe everything we're being told. We should be questioning. Even things we're seeing within this, we need to be skeptical, right? I mean, this exactly the perfect point. The idea of something like this, that is, in my opinion, a little bit too definitive for what we're seeing here. Don't be like that, right? This is good information, but we should have said, at the end of the day, we shouldn't be as definitive as we're saying. Like the way that I framed it in my title is what I'm talking about. The idea that this is Gates Foundation meets with contact tracing participants, right? That's a big deal. Even though it's not as slam dunk as they want to make it out to be, we need to be skeptical. We need to show discernment. We need to be honest. Print this out. Go out tomorrow. Talk to people. Do not get mad. Do not get angry. Do not get violent. Just try to spread the truth and do your best to do what you think is right. Starts tomorrow. And hopefully it doesn't end until things change. And I cannot express how clear I am. The last thing I ever call for is violence. But as I've always said, there are times when it's necessary. And that is when you're defending yourself or those you care about or fighting for something in regard to that, that is saving yourself from violence. At the end of the day, I think we need to realize that violence begets violence. We need a new path. We need something away from what these people are. Doing what they are doing to take control makes us just like them. I mean, even as I say that, I disagree with that. But at the end of the day, like them in a certain way. Let's put it that way. We don't need to be like them. We need to be better than them. We're fighting for a better future. Let's make one. Thank you for joining me today, guys. Appreciate everyone being here, taking the time to think for yourselves. Maybe I'll see you out there tomorrow. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Now, I want to make the case for secrecy in government when it comes to the conduct of national security affairs and possibly for deception.
You would lie in order to preserve the truth.
If I had to say something I knew was false to protect American national security, I would do it.
But you took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the Constitution mandates certain openness and certain fairness. You're willing to do away with that in order to achieve a temporary military goal?
The Constitution's not a suicide pact.
But you took an oath to it.
I don't make any apology for it.
When I was a cadet, what's the cadet motto at West Point? You will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. I was the CIA director. We lied, we cheated, we stole. It's like we had entire training courses.
What was that?
There will be a briefing.
No briefing. Anyway, welcome to the State Department. I think we have some interns in the back. Welcome. Good to see you in this exercise in transparency and democracy.